Sourcing Matters Podcast. This is your host, Aaron Niederhelman, sharing stories of our food.
And welcome back to Sourcing Matters. This is your host, Aaron Niederhelman. For any of us who have spent time in the Northeast, we've developed a strange but strong affinity for the region. New England values seem to stick with us. This type of brethren earned equally from cold winter mornings and rainy spring days to that of the perfect summer evening or a crisp fall afternoon. In fact, many feel the beauty of our natural environment yearns for a lifetime. Certain things have a knack for spurring these deep-seated memories, food being at the top of the list, and fresh, delicious seafood synonymous with the coastal communities of the Northeast is an experience that more should enjoy and celebrate together. The clean, cold waters of the protected North Atlantic provide some of the best and healthiest food in the world. Our well-regarded fishermen and ocean farmers who manage these waters deserve to be celebrated for their craft and unique stewardship of these natural resources. Thanks to the natural gifts bestowed upon us and our approach for managing our marine ecosystem over the last 50 years, this is, after all, some of the cleanest food in the world, which triggers these deep-seated and fond memories of some of the best times of our lives. As renowned fishery and tourist destination, not many places in the world carry the mystique as Gloucester, Massachusetts. Incorporated in 1642, from its early days, Gloucester has been and remains a fishing community. It was in the mid-1800s when fishermen began to access the ledges of the Grand Banks, and Gloucester cast itself as a global superpower and throughput. Now, it's a bit of a different opportunity for Gloucester and its surrounding communities of the Northeast to cast a long shadow. We now become a testing ground for a modern, responsible fishery focused on proper management of the increasingly contaminated and depleted oceans. With the need to feed 3 billion folks around the globe, relying on seafood for their main caloric intake, someone must look for tomorrow. Today, we welcome a guest who's leading and representing these folks in the industry on the North Shore of Massachusetts. Today, we welcome Congressman Seth Moulton of Massachusetts 6th District. Hello, Congressman Moulton. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Aaron?
Yeah, I'm well. Thanks. I appreciate you taking the time to speak with us. I think we seem to share a similar affinity for both the innovation economy within fisheries and also for the region itself.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I'm proud to represent a district where I grew up. I like to spend as much water on the time myself as I can, and we have a lot of work to do on our fishery and making sure that it's there for fishermen and lovers of seafood alike for many generations to come.
Yeah, and I think it's important to bring up some of the things that you've done successfully since you've taken office in 2015. One of the things that I'm familiar with, where I first connected with your team a few years ago, is when you hosted Monica Jane with Fish 2.0 at their Northeast Hub near your offices in Salem. Could you share a bit with our audiences some of your objectives of bringing in this thought leadership group and instigating future fisheries and regenerative ocean farming to the North Shore of Massachusetts?
Yeah, absolutely, and we think it was a huge success. You know, the Northeast produces 127% more seafood sales, 38% more fishing jobs than the rest of the United States combined. Massachusetts alone creates more ocean food jobs per statute mile of coast than any other state. And so Massachusetts is a global leader in innovation. But applying that innovative spirit across the fishing industry has sometimes been a challenge. And we want to make sure that New England can become the center of excellence for sustainable fishing innovation, just like we've been such an innovative leader in so many other parts of our economy. So right now, the fishing industry is in crisis. The warming ocean temperatures, uncertainty with what's happening with fish stocks, increasingly restrictive quotas on the fishermen, have created some real challenges for our fishing communities and for all the people who rely on their output. And so we decided that we wanted to support and accelerate sustainable seafood innovation with a creative solution that will help put money back in the pockets of fishermen and their communities. And so in February of last year, we hosted a Fish 2.0 regional workshop in Salem, Massachusetts. It's a social enterprise, essentially, that connects investors and entrepreneurs to grow the sustainable seafood sector. And working through Fish 2.0's expanding global network, because they're doing this in many other parts of the world, regional workshops and other events, Fish 2.0 participants get to collaborate on driving innovation, business growth, and positive impact. So what they do is they come to the workshop. We had 20 New England businesses participate, and three made it all the way to the final competition in California. So they come, they present their new ideas, they explain why it's worth investing in their new innovative plans to create a more sustainable fishery. One of the people on my team, Morgan Bell, she attended the competition to support our New England businesses. And, you know, just to give you a couple of ideas of how they did, American Unagi, which won the ICX Prize, Blue Water Metrics, and the Real Oyster Cult were some of the names of these three, the businesses that participated and did particularly well. And what they said is that they, as a result of this workshop, we're able to build lasting relationships with other entrepreneurs and other investors who want to support this kind of innovation in our fishing economy.
I had a chance to participate in it, Seth, and I thought it was fantastic. What I found the most rewarding part, so I had a chance to do an assessment on many of the New England fisheries a few years back. I did many visits, over 60 visits with different thought leaders within the space. And what I was somewhat struck by was the predatory and parochial mentality of most of the New England fisheries, where New Bedford would be competing with Gloucester or Gloucester with Portland, Maine. What I thought this event did, and to your credit for bringing this together, was it cultured a community. It brought together these folks, and whether it's the Real Oyster Cult, which is doing direct delivery for oysters, or looking out for our glass eels in Maine, a highly desirable entity in the Far East, and protecting those through a very creative, smart way of actually, you know, curating and cultivating these new seeds. I think it was an awakening effort, and it was a community building effort.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, if you'll pardon the pun, we're all sort of in the same boat up here. And we have a lot of challenges in our industry. And too often, you know, there is this sense in that people are trying to throw each other off the boat rather than figuring out how to coexist and weather the storm. And so that's one of the things that came out of this workshop. You know, we're also just, as a state, you know, we're so proud of driving the innovative economy. We have some of the leading biotech firms in the entire world. We were the start of the tech revolution before Silicon Valley kind of got ahead of us. And we have extraordinary universities and schools, a real culture that values learning and innovation. And we want to make sure that the fishing industry benefits from all that energy as well.
Yeah, I'll take your pun and raise you one and say it does rise all tides, right? I mean, it's an opportunity for so many folks to cast that larger shadow. And I wanted to mention to Congressman Moulton is that, so last fall, after a dozen years in Newton, Massachusetts, my family moved up to Ipswich. So for
very
our
nice.
Listeners, it's a unique opportunity for them to listen to my conversation with my congressman. So what an opportunity. So again, thank you for partaking in this year.
Well, I work for your family now, so that's how this works. I'm a public servant, and I'm proud to have your family as constituents.
Well, that's very nice. Thank you. I'll let them know. Let's talk about that. Let's say what we're doing here in the Northeast is this opportunity to project this as maybe even intellectual property that we gotta manage our seas differently. We gotta treat them as a regenerative natural resource. So you've taken your efforts back to D.C. and you fought for protecting our fishermen throughout the U.S. And in 2017, you co-authored the Young Fishermen's Development Act with Rep. Young, who's a congressman out of Alaska. And this maybe was one of the only bipartisan bills to pass throughout the entire last year. I could be wrong there, but it seems, at least from our world within food systems and production agriculture, a very successful approach. So could you tell our audience a bit more about that bill and how you see it developing in coming years?
Yeah, so it's a fantastic bipartisan bill. It actually hasn't passed yet. We're still working on getting it passed. But the reason is that there's currently no single federal program dedicated to training, educating, and assisting the next generation of commercial fishermen. And so because of the high cost of entry, the financial risks of, you know, buying boats and making that initial investment in to be able to get into the fishing industry, it's harder and harder for young men and women to just start a career in commercial fishing. And so what we were actually approached by young fishermen who had this idea. This wasn't just my team who came up with this. This was young fishermen who said, we need help being able to succeed our parents' generation and making sure that there's a new generation of fishermen ready to continue plying the trade. So as you said, Congressman Don Young from Alaska is my bipartisan co-author of the bill. And we introduced it. It's called the Young Fishermen's Development Act. And it's modeled after the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Beginning Farmers and Ranchers Development Program. So there's a model out there that's been used in the agriculture industry that we're following. It's been used successfully. And what the bill would do is it would provide funding to different groups that offer instruction in seamanship, in navigation, in electronics, safety, in vessel maintenance, entrepreneurship, and sustainable fishing, all things that are related to the commercial fishing business. At the end of the day, Americans are going to continue to eat fish, and that's why it's in our national interest to make sure that there is a future generation of commercial fishermen that can provide freshly caught, sustainably sourced local seafood to our communities.
What I like for the trend that we've seen coming out of really all of Massachusetts, but, you know, spearheaded with things like Gloucester Fresh and other initiatives out of the North Shore, even in Ipswich with clam production, is the provenance behind that, that we're learning that what we produce in these clean, cold waters of the Northeast is something special, and that moniker should be carried, whether it's sold domestically or internationally.
No, that's absolutely right. You know, when I came into Congress, I found that there were these big divisions around fishing. You know, you were either with the environmentalists or you were with the fishermen. And, you know, like the two senators in my state, you know, they're kind of ones with the fishermen, ones with the environmentalists. And it just struck me as odd because at the end of the day, we're all really after the same thing. We all want a sustainable fishery. That fishermen need that if they're going to continue fishing. Environmentalists, of course, want a sustainable fishery. And federal regulators, that's their mandate to provide a sustainable fishery. And frankly, as just a consumers of fish, we should have sustainable fisheries on our shores, because if they just shut down the fisheries, we're going to get our fish from overseas. We're going to keep eating fish, and they're going to come from places that have no regulation, no environmental protections whatsoever. So we ought to be able to just get everybody on the same page around that shared goal of getting to the point where we really do have a sustainable fishery that serves all our interests.
Agreed. I mean, I think we can definitely find some common ground, and you know, those regulations that we put on fisheries are a bit of a double-edged sword, but going through them and now having those learning experiences, I think provides us a competitive advantage on a global level on looking what the values are of our fisheries and of our ocean farmers. So what I want to ask you, Seth, is you had mentioned that the Young Fishermen's Development Act was modeled after the Young Farmers and Ranchers Program. We have an impending 2018 Farm Bill, which is allocating $500 billion towards the U.S. food plan. It happens once every 5 years. It's a big deal. Many of these discussions, especially around SNAP or food stamps, become a political football, right? So we get 80% of resources allocated to nutrition plan. Americans in need who need these resources to do that. But my question for you is why don't we include fisheries and seafood in this allocation? Really, the Farm Bill is really our food plan. And do we see an opportunity for subsidizing fishermen and fisheries and seafood in the 2023 or 2028 food bills?
Well, I certainly hope that we consider it because, look, this is part of our food industry, and this is an incredibly important food source. And in fact, it happens to be one of the healthiest food sources that we have. So in some ways, it's kind of it seems kind of crazy to me that we have no hesitation in doling out hundreds of millions of dollars of subsidies to things like corn, which is not necessarily the healthiest food out there, and yet we're not willing to invest in our fisheries, which are producing some of the healthiest, most naturally, sustainably sourced food that we have. So I hope we will look at that. You know, this is going to come down a lot, I think, into, you know, who's in charge of Congress and, And are we looking at the future for creative, innovative solutions, or are we kind of looking back to the past? And I've on a political note been calling for a new generation of leadership, because I think we have to look towards the future.
Yeah. And it is interesting, because I've been told that the Northeast, you know, our cornfields are our oceans, right? And people don't look at it that way. Many people within the agricultural infrastructure of the U.S. and people that deal often in the Farm Bill look at, you know, soybeans or corn within the Central Plains around the Ogallala. But if you break down what we actually have for population densities, boy, it's a significant around our coastal communities. So if it is representing our food plan for everyone, yeah, I think our if we look at it from those multidimensional aspects, those many values of treating our regenerative oceans properly and sourcing quality food, it does seem like a natural parallel. And I do agree with you, Congressman Moulton, that this is a discussion that will come up for generations next, where we have more of a systems thinking approach to this.
And that's really the point, is we don't want to pit one group against the other. I mean, look, we have cornfields in the 6th District of Massachusetts as well. Newburyport's right on the water. Newbury and West Newbury have a bunch of farms, and right next door. And so we just need to think about this as a systems approach. We need to think about the whole food system and how it makes the most sense to support all of it, to make sure that we have the food that we need and that it's healthy and sustainable.
So let's take another aspect that I think is a key discussion here that many people may not realize is, so often folks look at U.S. fisheries, especially in the Northeast, as an oppressed and declining industry. I think we share a different perspective that looks at these modern responsible fisheries and regenerative ocean farms as an entire seafood industry and a jobs creation vehicle for the region, an opportunity to develop even new IP that could feed ourselves on a shrinking planet. So could you share with our audience a bit more of the ways that you've been trying to shift that mindset, or to change the mindset that sustainable food production can mean jobs for our region, and how that plays out to more of your conservative brethren?
Well, absolutely, because again, we really do want the same goal here. We want a sustainable fishery. Fishermen need it for the long term. They don't want to just fish themselves out of existence. They want to make sure that that they can come back and harvest fish next year and the year after that. Of course, environmentalists are very outspoken about that. Some environmentalists just want to shut down the fishery, but you know what? We'd still keep eating fish, and then we'd have to get fish from overseas where there are no environmental regulations whatsoever in many parts of the world. And that's not good for environmentalist goals. And of course, the federal regulators have been trying to get us on the same page. So what I did just in my district is I set up what we call the Cod Assessment Task Force. A cod is the iconic fish species of New England. It's a species that's been under a lot of pressure recently, especially from rising ocean temperatures that seem to be shifting the cod populations further north. And I set up this task force to bring together scientists, NOAA and fishing industry stakeholders, the regulators with the guys who are out there on the boats, to provide clear recommendations on how to improve the ways that we see how many fish are out there, and therefore adjust our fishing quotas and whatnot to meet that. I mean, there's just been this great sense that there just hasn't been good data. And frankly, as we've seen the cod population plummet, you know, you have to recognize that the fishermen have just been following the quotas set by the regulators. So you can't just go and say, oh, the fishermen are fishing too much. I mean, they're just fishing what they're supposed to fish. Obviously, the regulators don't have the right data to make the right assessments and right decisions. So we're trying to bring together everybody to address that. Don't just rely on the regulator to do this on their own. Get the input from the fishermen who are out there fishing every single day, and make sure that scientists are there at the table as well, so they're bought into the solution too. The task force is planning to present their findings to NOAA by the end of this year. And we're excited just because, you know, whatever it says, we just feel confident that at least this time people will be more on the same page.
Yeah, less of a confrontational approach, right? We get everyone to harmonize an interest and sharing the same data, speaking the same language. It does allow us to look forward and to be pragmatic in our approach of dealing with a sustainable and responsible fishery.
You got to have the same facts. You got to start with the same facts. Yeah. You know, there's a famous Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan who used to say, everybody is entitled to his own opinion, but not to his own set of facts. And, of course, that's been called into question by some things happening in our politics these days. But frankly, on a serious note, it is really a problem. I mean, you have to agree on the facts. You have to get on the same page with the data, and then we can have a good debate about how to best interpret that data and how to find the best way forward.
I never thought we would have had a term alternative facts, right? Who knew about that? Yeah, well, there you go. Newly introduced with this administration.
So it is a problem, but we're just doing our best to make sure that it doesn't infect, that alternative facts don't infect the fishing industry as well.
We'll leave it at that. Yeah. So let's return to that idea of systems thinking real quick. Much of what we focus on new approach for food production, whether it's terrestrial or within the ocean, is sourcing food based off of a systems approach. This is not a reductionist approach. There are so many systems that interplay here. We have interchanges and exchanges in all systems that can reduce waste, find efficiencies, can renew natural resources, and harmonize those key stakeholders in effort to better shepherd those natural bounties. And so if we look at this as those systems thinking, even in food systems, as a new cost basis for circular economies even, do you see this maybe as a foothold or as an opportunity to implement some of these circular economies of systems thinking in D.C.?
Well, I'd like to think so. I mean, I think that D.C.'s got a lot of problems right now. And so, I don't want to be overly optimistic. But the point is that for too long, people in Washington have been thinking the same old ways about a different world. And we've got to have new approaches to problems. We've got to have innovative, forward-looking solutions. This isn't about going back to some mythical America that existed in the past. This is about rising to meet the challenges of the new economy, the challenges of the future, the new challenges in our fisheries. You know, just as one example, the water is warming off the coast of New England faster than any other body of ocean in the United States. And, you know, there are people in Washington who still don't believe in science and don't believe in climate change. The fishermen see it every single day. They see it on their boats. They see it on their thermometers that are in the water. And as a result, the fishing stocks are changing. They're moving. And we're not adapting quickly enough to that reality. Now, it doesn't have to be all bad. I mean, there are cod stocks that seem to be moving north and northeast out of the range of some of our local communities. But at the same time, there are fishing stocks from the Mid-Atlantic that are moving up. We can talk about what the long-term environmental harm there might be to this. But the bottom line is that there are fish to fish. We need to reassess, you know, how we're going after them and what we're doing to make sure that whatever fish we harvest, it's sustainable. So there are new opportunities, but we've got to bring some innovative thinking to this, and that's
Agreed.
What we're trying to do.
Yeah, and sometimes economics can be that common language that people will listen to in order to have those discussions and to realize that a modern consumer has different interests, different likes, and wants different values from that food system, but that can be a driver of change. So, Congressman Moulton, let me ask one last question, if I could, taking us a bit out of the fisheries, but it's something near and dear to your heart, something now, as one of your constituents, I'm going to ask as a father myself. So as a veteran, and you've been a leading force in fighting for background checks, for banning automatic weapons and enhanced programs like bump clips, or advocating really just for smart gun ownership. Where do we stand on this? And can we continue to compromise our values at the expense of our kids?
Well, where we stand is that there's been very little leadership in Washington on this at all. I've been working across the aisle on bipartisan bills that the vast majority of Americans, I'm not talking about even 55, 60%, but like 85, 90, 95, 97% of Americans agree, things that we can do to make our communities safer. Like just make sure that we have background checks. I mean, look, if you're a law-abiding citizen, you shouldn't be concerned about passing a background check. And we have background checks for a lot of gun purchases, but there are loopholes that allow criminals to get through them. And we ought to fix that. We ought to fix that system. We have a system that works when it's implemented, but it's not foolproof, and we ought to make it foolproof. I have a bill that I co-authored to just prevent terrorists from buying guns. I mean, what American wants a terrorist to buy a gun? I mean, come on, this is straightforward stuff. I also co-authored the bill to ban bump stocks, which were used to perpetrate the Las Vegas shooting. I mean, look, that insane man would have still gotten up there and would have shot a lot of people, but he wouldn't have killed as many if he didn't have access to bump stocks. The National Rifle Association has banned bump stocks from their own headquarters. I mean, they're not stupid. They know guns. They know these bump stocks are dangerous and don't have any place in our community. And yet they fight the legislation that we're trying to pass to make sure that that across the country, not just in the NRA headquarters, but across the country, people don't have access to these weapons of war. So there's a lot that we can need to do, but it comes back to having leaders in Congress who have the courage to be honest about the problems that we face and are innovative thinkers and are not going to just listen to the lobbies, the lobbyists and their money, but are going to do the right thing for Americans. You know, we deserve a country where we have elected leaders who earn our trust. You know, a country where we're safe and strong, both at home and abroad, but especially in our schools, right in our communities. It's just so frightening when you talk to school children today and they tell you that their number one fear is just being shot at school. I mean, how ridiculous is that? I never had to worry about that growing up, and I'm not that old.
No.
I didn't go to school worried about getting shot. I worried about doing my homework.
Yeah. It hurts. As a dad, it just hurts watching this. And you know, and I would say just as someone that's more on the civilian side, you just don't know what to do. You throw your hands up. But I have to say, I'm glad we have folks like yourself who are reaching across the aisle and trying to make a equally a compassionate discussion. But it just makes sense here. How can we continue to move in this direction? In fact, one of, I think, the best clips I've ever seen of a description is President Obama's description at town hall, where he compares it or makes the analogy to a driver's license. We don't let people just jump in a car and drive these things around. We do background checks. We check where people are at. We give tests. We make sure that you know the rules.
That's right.
That's right. Gun show. Pick this up.
No, yeah. I mean, that's the way. I mean, I'm a Marine veteran. You know, we train for weeks with rifles before we use them, and months before we use them in combat. And to go back to the analogy of a driver's license, I mean, a car can kill people, but it's designed to drive you around to get you from place to place, and yet we're so careful to make sure that you have to have a license before you drive. Guns are literally designed to kill people. That's how dangerous they are. So we ought to make sure that people who use them know what they're doing.
Yep. I don't think we need a bump stock to go take care of some of the deer on the North Shore, huh?
That's right. Unless you really have no idea what you're doing with a gun.
So, Congressman Moulton, maybe you can share with our audience where they can learn a bit more about the Young Fishermen's Development Act, about the think tanks that you're involved in, and about some of the work you're doing with smart and modern gun ownership rights.
Well, I hope you'll follow me. Follow me on Twitter, at Seth Moulton. That's SethMoulton. Find me on Facebook. And you can go to my website, which is just moulton.house.gov, and you can read all about the work that we're doing. In fact, I'm very proud of my team. We just received an award for being the most transparent congressional office. I put up explanations for every big vote I take to explain exactly what my thinking is and why I voted one way or the other. And we try to talk a lot about what we're doing, and we want to hear from people who have ideas and have ways that we can be doing things better. So I hope you'll follow me on Twitter, on Facebook, go to moulton.house.gov, and get involved. Get involved in your government, in your democracy. We'd love to hear from you.
Great. I will include links at the bottom of the write-up on the website so people can follow you on Twitter and other social media forums. And congratulations on that award. As one of your constituents, that does mean a lot to me. That is quite excellent. So congrats.
Thank you.
So in closing, I just want to say that I'd encourage our listeners to come up to the North Shore and enjoy some of our amazing and diverse bounty of the sea. The delicious and fresh seafood coming from these clean, cold waters is good for you. And thanks to the work of Seth Moulton, is destined to be around for decades, hopefully centuries to come. So, Congressman Moulton, I appreciate you taking the time, and I appreciate you sharing insights with our listening audience.
It's great to be here, Aaron. Thank you.
Thank you. And maybe at some point we can catch up for a few clams and oysters and beers up in the North Shore.
Would love that.
All right. Very good. Thank you very much. And good luck. I know you have to get back to the floor. You've got a big HR 200 vote today.
Well, we're trying to do something.
Yeah. All right. Very good.
Take care.
Thanks for the time.
Thank you.